This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
The 13th play of Texas A&M's first possession. Barber in zone with flags everywhere and a catch made by Thomas for a touchdown.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 Through the Fan. Right now, we bring to you College Football Insider for The Athletic. It is Stuart Mandel. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'll be doing better, depending or worse, depending on how you answer this first question. I am an Aggie, and I have really been nervous watching a big chunk of this season. How do you feel about the A&M-LSU matchup and then potentially A&M's playoff prospects?
Well, I think this is definitely the swing game for both of them, and it's really hard to pick against either of them because they're both playing so well right now. All the credit to A&M for, coming off that Notre Dame loss in the opener, and I feel like, it's gotten better and better. So just because it's at home, I think I'll lean toward A&M, but obviously LSU is playing pretty well of late, and I think whoever wins this game has an excellent shot to make the playoff, and this is very simplistic, and whoever loses is going to have their work cut out because they both have pretty tough schedules down the stretch.
Now, that could be simple, but could you tell us about the possibility of a super complex 8-team SEC tiebreaker?
I think there's going to be a crazy tiebreaker in both the SEC and the Big Ten this year because they have such big conferences and such uneven schedules, especially in the SEC. Just for fun, in my mailbag today, I did sketch out an 8-team tiebreaker or an 8-team tie of everybody going 6-2, and honestly did not require, some crazy Mississippi State knock somebody off kind of scenario. Every, team's losses among those two losses are definitely possible. Is that actually going to happen? No, especially because there will be losses that you don't see coming, right? Somebody from the bottom eight will beat the top eight. But if I can come up with eight, that way, then I'm sure we can come up with four and half of these teams finishing with the same record, which would also be really messy.
Has the transition of the teams that moved into the SEC been better or has it just lived up to exactly what you thought it was going to be?
Well, Oklahoma's been disappointing. I mean, Texas, despite what happened the other night, I think you have to say has fit in just fine. I think Steve Sarkisian did a great job in his recruiting of having that program ready to go in the SEC. And then Oklahoma, it's crazy that they were ranked as recently as they were. Because I don't know, they're going to have a hard time making a bowl game unless, obviously he changed offensive coordinators this week. He's going back to Jackson Arnold at quarterback. If he looks much better than he did early in the season, then maybe they've got a decent chance. But all season long, the offense has just looked completely broken and kind of wasting, frankly, that Brent Venables did what he said he was going to do and build Oklahoma, build up their defense. This is the best defense they've had in a long time there. It would be easy to say they weren't prepared for the SEC, but I don't know. I think they'd be having the same problem in the Big 12 right now. If you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a quarterback.
We were struggling to answer this question yesterday. This is going to be the biggest Notre Dame-Navy game since when?
The 40s?
Yeah.
60s?
Yeah. That's kind of what we thought.
There were a couple games, I feel like Charlie Weiss, early Brian Kelly. Like at one point, that was the longest streak, a winning streak of one opponent over another. Navy finally broke it. And that was a big deal. But it wasn't like, I don't believe Navy was a top 25 team. And certainly we didn't have a 12-team playoff at that time, where if Navy wins this game, suddenly they've got realistic, aspirations to be that group of five team. So yeah, definitely high stakes for both of them.
Can you explain Indiana's rise to me in football is it for real?
If you watch any of the Nebraska game, if there's any thought beforehand that it was fluky, there isn't now. I mean, they beat them 56-7 and Nebraska is not Georgia, but they were 5-1. They had a top 10 defense and it was a complete blowout. And, they are benefiting from a lighter schedule when you talk about unbalanced schedules. But that's a really good team. And I don't have deep insight on why they're doing it other than to say the transfer portal to me has been has created great parity. The exact opposite of what Nick Saban predicted, that it would be the rich getting richer. That a program like Indiana, Kurt Cignetti gets there, first of all, gets a bunch of guys from James Madison to follow him, goes and decides, you know, picks his quarterback, and his quarterback, Curtis Rourke, he's injured now, but the guy from Ohio has been very good. Like, there's guys all over that field that are new this year, that were not part of a 3-9 team last year. And it's just unbelievable. And I would say the same thing about Vanderbilt, how a team that is, you know, really a program that's been really struggling, if you hit in the portal, not just one guy, but a bunch of guys, can drastically improve from one year to the next.
Talk with Stuart Mandel from The Athletic right here on 105.3 The Fan, breaking down that college football. Now, Indiana is one of just two teams in the country, along with Army, that hasn't trailed in a game this season. Army feels like another one that, I have to admit, I did not see an undefeated start to the season coming.
Army, you know, is very interesting because, you know, I did a story going into last season. Jeff Munkin got away from the under center triple option that Army had always done because of rules changes about blocking, about chop blocks, that he decided he thought they needed to go more into like a modern spread option. And that did not work. So he went back to what he knows, and they're just killing people. Now, you talk about a light schedule. Every conference team they've beaten so far has a losing record. Some of them are 1-6 or 2-5. So I don't think I think a little bit of caution there in terms of the dominance they've had to this point. But, you know, this is, you know, to be 7-0 at this point in the season. And by the way, they've still got, you know, Air Force is not very good. UTSA is not very good. But they'll play North Texas, who's, you know, better this year, and obviously Notre Dame and Navy. So it'll be interesting to watch them down the stretch.
I appreciate you giving a compliment to my mean green at North Texas. Thank you very much.
You're off to a good start, and the coach is, you know, telling people, hey, 11 a.m., deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The Cam Ward.
This guy.
And what Miami is doing. Can you kind of explain? Because I was asking that question before the season. Are they the best team in Florida? And it looks like they, you know, they're really pushing to be one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, and Cam Ward has been everything they hoped he would be and more, just the swagger he plays with. You know, if you ask Washington State fans, he's a bit of an adventure there. You know, he can be great one moment, throw an ugly pick the next. But he obviously didn't have the talent around him he has at Miami, who also brought in, there's another transfer portal heavy team with a lot of money in their NIL collective, who brought in Damian Martinez from Oregon State, great running back, Sam Brown from Houston, great receiver, and a lot of other guys as well. They are living a little bit dangerously. I don't think they have a great defense. They've gone down to the wire the last three games. There are people who genuinely think the ACC replay people have, you know, are doing their work for them. I think all three have come down to a big review, but like, they are the right calls. So you can call it a conspiracy if you want, but they got those calls right. So, you know, them and Clemson, right, I think are the two to beat in the ACC, though SMU is certainly making a case as well.
Also, how does college football keep fans from getting plays overturned by not throwing beer bottles on the field anymore? Like, how do they approach that? The $250,000 fine should be enough, or what?
Yeah, I mean, I don't love the way the SEC's handled it. I mean, obviously they you're right, they you know, big fine. It's interesting. They said that they're going to make Texas try to like prosecute people or kick them out of the stadium. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, that would be a pretty big deterrent. But I'm just really disappointed there hasn't been any further explanation of why that all happened the way it did, with the delay and then overturning a call that they'd already marked off. You can say, well, they got the right call in the end, so all worked out. Yes, but like you said, we need an explanation to know to keep the conspiracy theories down. And at this point, what Kirby Smart said after the game is absolutely right. The precedent that was set here is, if you throw enough stuff on the field and delay the game and give them more time to either watch the replay on the scoreboard or just think about it some more, you can get your call overturned. And they're just going to let that sit out there, I guess. And, you know, well, they're going to really regret that if this happens again in a game this week or at any point in the season.
where we're at in the season, who do you have right now playing for the national championship?
I think after all said and done, it might still be the same two teams I had before the season in Georgia and Ohio State. I am very impressed with Oregon, and obviously they beat Ohio State, and I'm not trying to take that away from them. But I'm also not going to, everybody wants to fire Ryan Day. It was a one-point loss on the road in a hostile atmosphere with a really weird ending. I mean, they basically played to a draw. And so Ohio State, they're going to prove it one way or the other down the stretch. They have to go to Penn State. They get to play Indiana. We'll see how that goes. Michigan's obviously not very good this year. So, I think they're going to be very battle-tested. Georgia obviously is going to be battle-tested. But the SEC is so deep with contenders this year that it may be that Georgia ends up not even playing in the SEC championship. It's again, crazy tiebreakers might be involved.
Fun hypothetical here for Ohio State. Their two top running backs are averaging 6.9 and 8.2 yards per carry. If Zeke Elliott got to go back to college today, could he actually do that?
It's a great question. I think that was a pretty good, if you think back to Ohio State around that era, a pretty darn good offensive line and a very talented team. And so somebody who follows Ohio State a lot closer than me would have to compare the two. But, Zeke Elliott's college career to me is now always synonymous with the game where they lost to Michigan State and he came out afterward and threw the coaches under the bus for not giving him the ball enough. Mm-hmm. If Chip Kelly was his offensive coordinator, he would not have to worry about getting enough carries.
Man, awesome stuff. We appreciate the time very much, good sir. Stuart Mandel from The Athletic, thank you again.
All right, thanks, guys.
There you go. College football right here on 105.3 The Fan. That was absolutely interesting. I have another thing I want to add to you.
What do you think? Do you think Zeke would be worse than the two yes. top running backs? I do too.
Absolutely.
I think Zeke would average like 5 yards a carry Ohio State this year.
I think there's no question he would be worse. You remember Frankie Muniz?
Yes, he was in it's the middle show.
Malcolm in the Middle,
yeah.
He played Malcolm.
Good for him.
He is now
Agent Cody Banks.
I guess that is true.
Lead role.
He's been racing for a while now.
Like sprints?
Against like Carl Lewis?
Slalom?
Yeah, against Carl Lewis. He has landed a full-time seat in the NASCAR Truck Series for 2025.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's what he did with all his money, huh?
I know.
Watch out, Jeff Gordon.
I don't think it is his team that he like sponsors all of.
He's just racing, huh?
Yeah, he could have made it of his own accord, maybe.
Oh, he was in Big Fat Liar. Oh, he was in a movie called Racing Stripes.
Dick Trickle's still racing?
How long has it been since you like sat down and watched a race?
Years.
Okay. Is there any chance? Well, you don't even know who this person is, so you probably won't watch this.
Yeah. He's in the middle.
Have you ever seen that show?
I think so. Did the guy who sold drugs?
Yes.
Yeah, he was in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's the daddy.
There are some people who like to throw out the idea that is somehow the sequel series Breaking Bad, right? Or is it the prequel series? One of those where like either he survived and then he picked up a family or this just broke him and how mean his wife was.
What about Boyer?
You know what? We'll get some contemporary racing talk going for you at another time.
Sweet.